Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome into another edition of the Basketball Show right here on 92.9thegame.com. My name's Andy Bunker.
And I'm Arthur Trish.
We appreciate you being with us.
Most definitely. Today we have another guest for you listeners out there. I think you'll enjoy the conversation. His name is Mark Spears. He's the senior NBA writer for the ESPN's The Undefeated. We talk about a wide range of subjects, ranging from his days as a longtime NBA beat writer, having covered the Nuggets and the Celtics, especially during the Celtics championship years, and the state of the Hawks, and where they should go from here with their vacant GM position, and what he feels is shaping up as we look forward to the NBA Finals.
Now, there's definitely a lot of on-the-court playoff action to talk about, and we will do that.
Yep.
But this has also been a really interesting week in terms of off the court stuff as well.
Very much so.
In the fourth quarter, we'll get to the Celtics and their 2008 reunion and the feelings that have been hurt. And obviously we'll ask Mark about that as well, being that he covered that specific Celtics team back in 2008 as well.
Yeah, and thankfully those guys provided us some instant material. So you listeners out there know we always have an old school segment. Well, it'll be 10 years since the Celtics won their championship.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah, I can remember it like yesterday and Paul Pearson at the wheelchair. Yeah, but we'll get into that later in this podcast.
Is this our fifth podcast, probably?
This will be number five.
And I think the Paul Pierce wheelchair has come up on four of them.
Yeah, that Laker, as much as I say I'm not as much of a Laker fan as I used to be, it seems to always come back to the Lakers-Celtics.
Nobody can blame you. Another off-the-court issue, which we'll talk about in the first quarter when we talk about the Hawks, is Dwight Howard and his recent traffic incident. I guess not so recent. It was the morning of Game 6. We just found out about it yesterday. So without any further ado, let's get started. Let's get to the first quarter. So obviously the Hawks are, in day 5 now of the new president and general managerial search. I don't know that we know much more now than we did over the past few days. A couple names have come up. Joe Dumars' name has been kicked around quite a bit. And Dumars actually spoke on ESPN about his interest in this job, or at least not. He didn't say that he's not interested, I think is probably the better way to put it.
Yeah, and as a matter of, he was very diplomatic about it. And obviously, Rachel Nichols' ESPN The Jump program had him on this week, and he wasn't going to come out and flat out say, I want the job. But I'm sure based on his years of experience, he was the first black GM to win a NBA championship in that helm. And things kind of his teams went to 6 straight Eastern Conference Finals as well. So there's pedigree there. Things didn't end the way he wished it had. And a couple of bad drafting decisions, a couple of free agent decisions that went awry hurt the Pistons. And Joe has been out of basketball, I want to say, for maybe 5 or 6 years now. He was a consultant with the New Orleans Pelicans over the past couple of years. And over the past year, he's been on the sidelines, I guess just observing the NBA and maybe hoping for that chance. It could be Atlanta. I mean, there is another another GM candidate that I know very well who's in Cleveland, David Griffin, whose name has come up regarding the position. I don't know if I necessarily believe David would be interested in coming to Atlanta because I think you might as well ride the LeBron James train as long as you can and win as much as you can and try to win as many championships as you can around him. And for him to leave, it may be a contract ploy, and all more power to him because while you're as hot,
get a raise.
Get as much money as you possibly can. Everybody else is getting paid in Cleveland, so go ahead and do so. His name has come up along the Orlando Magic current vacant position, and I don't expect him to be going anywhere. And some of those other names out there that have yet to kind of show up, Sharif Abdur-Rahim, who formerly played with the Hawks, played at Cal. He's now currently – he was an assistant GM with the Sacramento Kings up until the recent changes in their basketball operations department. He's now working with at the NBA office in New York and player programs. I'm not sure how much experience this group will be looking for a person in that role. I think it's important to find someone with a great deal of experience because this team is at a crossroads yet again. And they need to find someone who can come in and maybe change the culture and the way this team has gone through things the past 2 years. Because since the 60-22 season, they've lost or they haven't won as many games as they did in each of those years.
Yeah.
And so while Mike Budenholzer will remain as head coach, it's going to be a delicate balance as to how that person relates to him and vice versa.
I thought Mike Bell brought up a really interesting point on your guys' show earlier
Mike
this afternoon.
Bell?
I was just as surprised as anybody. But when he said that the person they bring in for that job probably needs to be someone like what you're talking about, with mm-hmm. experience, with a little tenure, maybe with a little bit of a reputation, because Coach Bud got demoted. He did.
Right.
He still gets to be the coach, and that's a very exclusive job in the NBA, obviously. And I'm sure that the franchise still has a great deal of confidence in him to do that job. Otherwise, they wouldn't have kept him around. But he got demoted,
right.
and he was calling the shots over the last couple of years. It's hard to go from being the shot caller to having to ask permission or just have a voice in the conversation. And I think it's especially hard if it's some 35-year-old
Wonderkin.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Some young math guy.
Yeah.
And I don't say that negatively because I tend to really like analytic guys and those young up-and-comers. I think that there's a lot to be said for that style as well. I just don't know that that would work here. And Coach Bud is such an analytical guy anyway.
Already, yes.
So to bring in someone who's so similar to him in that mindset could be sort of a groupthink mentality, which might not be the best direction. I like the idea of a guy like Joe Dumars. I hadn't given a whole lot of a thought to Sharif Abdul-Rahim, but the way you talk about him, that sounds very interesting to me as well. But whoever it is, I think needs to be one of those guys. So Coach Bud looks at him and says, all right, I used to be the guy making that decision, but this guy's got a championship.
Well, he's going to have to immediately respect the person.
Exactly right.
And you can't have – we've already had enough division with the Hawks and whether it's on the court or off the court and within the hierarchy of the front office. You can't do that. You can't mess this up again. And not to say it was a total fail in terms of giving Budenholzer the president of basketball operations position. They just they didn't handle a lot of trade situations well. I mean, look at Kyle Korver right now.
Yeah.
He's completely balling in Cleveland. We knew he could still shoot the ball. The offense just wasn't working for him here as it did 2 years ago when they went 60-22. A couple of the names that you may hear over the coming days. I know Grant Hill's name has been thrown around a lot. I don't know if I necessarily see that happening because I think Grant has too many outside interests going to that would prevent him from wanting to get.
If he would
Same
do
here.
It, I would
Same
love
here.
It. I just don't think he's interested based on everything that I'm hearing.
If he was willing to devote the time, I love the fact that players can get into management roles, whether it's the NFL, Major League Baseball, or the NBA. I'm all for that because it shows those guys have the ability to do that. That's not to say that a regular Joe can't handle that position. No, but players have those aspirations as well. They would like to take it from the court to the boardroom as well. So if there's an opportunity that presents itself and Grant Hill is that guy and is willing to do the 9 to 7 or more of the hours that it takes, then I put him ahead of each and everybody else because he's already here. He already knows the personnel. He already knows the people running the team as far as the coaching staff is concerned. And so there wouldn't be – they may be able to just make slight changes in his mind instead of making significant changes. Another person whose name you may hear of is Bobby Marks, who is currently working for Adrian Wojnarowski's The Vertical as a salary cap expert type guy who writes a lot of stories and does a lot of on-camera work for them. But he was formerly an assistant GM back with the Nets during their days in New Jersey and started out in Brooklyn. And when the team was bought over by the current owner, the Russian
name, I always forget
all of
his
a sudden
name.
Escapes me. They made a coach or a change there, and now he's been working with the Vertical. But Bobby is an experienced cap guy, and given the fact that the Hawks could have a lot of salary cap issues moving forward, he could be yet another guy who's in the mix.
And as we've said the last couple weeks, and will continue to say on throughout the summer, whoever it is that they hire has a number of questions to answer.
No doubt.
And we'll go through them as the summer goes on. But one question that we knew there was going to be questions surrounding Dwight, There are more questions surrounding Dwight now, though, I think, given the news that broke yesterday that he got his car impounded on the morning of, like, 2 o'clock in the morning of game six, the knockout game against the Wizards here in Atlanta. He was speeding, going 95 in a 65, didn't have insurance, didn't have up to date tabs. And then, and this is what's interesting
to me.
Well, just the timeline, because you and I have talked about this.
Yes.
And I know that I'm not going to get too bent out of shape about the way that he showed up to exit interviews.
Right.
It was an interesting fashion decision.
If you haven't seen the photo, it's probably out there in Twitterverse.
Yeah, and we could post it on the site as well alongside the podcast here. It was just an interesting fashion decision on an exit interview, knowing full well that
this
2 days
happened.
Earlier yeah. that this had happened. Yeah. So I think that adds and plays into that as well. To me, and I've heard people talking about this all day long about Dwight and his brush, his warning from this police officer. It doesn't change anything I feel about Dwight Howard. This right. does not change my opinion of Dwight Howard. It probably fortifies the opinion that I had on Dwight Howard, and I'm on the record as not being the biggest Dwight Howard fan in the world. Mm. This just sort of goes to further my idea of who he is and how little he cares about his situation and the promises that he made to this city and the pressure that's on his back. It doesn't seem like a guy cares very much about it. That was the impression that I got throughout the majority of the season, and this just sort of furthers that for me.
It was disappointing to me because it's all about priorities, and what I mean by that is you knew you had a game within maybe 12 to 15 hours. And it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm not saying you shouldn't be out in the streets, but if you had all of your paperwork in order and you weren't speeding, we don't know anything about this. And it doesn't become a hot button subject, and it doesn't add to the layers of some people's disgust with Dwight Howard being here and the year he kind of had. I think the populace, it was probably 50-50 whether people could appreciate having Dwight back home. I mean, having watched him during his high school days at Atlanta Christian and to see how far his career has ascended, it's on the decline right now. And that's sad to say, having watched him when he was a young guy and to see how he dominated the Hawks and us when we played him all those years when he was in Orlando, winning Defensive Player of the Year awards, leading his team to the finals. And once he suffered that back injury there and his subsequent departure from the Magic, he's never been that guy. Going to the Lakers, the history of centers who adorned the walls of the Staples Center, Mikan, Chamberlain, Jabbar, and now Shaquille. You would have thought if he stayed with Kobe and stayed beyond Kobe's years, his jersey would have gone up there as well. I don't know at this point of Dwight Howard's career if anyone will retire his jersey at this stage. And that's sad to say because he left on bad terms in Orlando. The term Dwightmare was created because of all the stuff that went down. And if you remember the infamous press conference where Stan Van Gundy is talking about Dwight and he doesn't have any idea this is going on. He walks up to him and he thinks it's a yuck yuck moment. And you could look at Stan's face like he wanted to be anywhere near Dwight at that point in time. And the season still wasn't over then. We were about to play them in the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken. And so he comes to Atlanta looking for a fresh start, thinking it would be a better chance for him to revive his career. And it was probably, if I had to give him a grade on the season, I would probably say a B-. And that may be generous in some quarters because while he averaged a double-double, we didn't have enough of those Dwight Howard-type games we had grown to expect over his career. And I don't know where it goes because he's still owed two more years on his contract at a hefty price.
Yeah.
And the new GM coming in is going to have to weigh that as he weighs each and every other potential free agent situation they have on the roster. And I know there's probably some people who want Dwight gone and some people who don't feel Dwight should be the brunt of all the criticism. And I agree with a lot of that. But I don't know if we will ever see the Dwight Howard Superman figure caricature we saw in those Orlando years ever again. And that's sad to say.
It is sad because he was really, really likable back then.
Yep.
And he was really, really good.
And dominant.
Really, really good back then, too. Yeah, I mean, great. He was. He was a great player in the league for a stretch of time. And I don't want to sit here and get on a soapbox and say what he did, that individual mistake that he made the morning of Game 6, is the biggest deal in the world. Because I don't think that it is. But compounded with all of the other stuff.
It's the fact that it happened.
Exactly.
More than anything.
And it happened to him.
Right.
And it happened to him that day.
Yep.
And it was such a negligent mistake, like such an easily fixable thing. You know what I mean? It just shows such a lack of self-awareness and such a, just a lack of accountability, really. And again, like, I know it's not that big of a deal. Like, if Paul Millsap did this, I would feel very differently about it because Paul Millsap is a different person. But I think with Dwight, it just sort of reflects a lot of the other things that either were rumored about him or we've seen about him in his career. As like, oh yeah, all right, yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense that he would get pulled over for speeding at 2 o'clock in the morning, the day of the last game of the season. Like, it's just sort of par for the course for Dwight at this point. And I don't know. I don't know what happens to him because he's sort of gone all of the other places that he could go to try to salvage his career.
Well, and based on the fact that I forget which writer solicited advice from several NBA GMs on the worth of Dwight Howard, should they make a move for him? And the answer was maybe a second round pick and some salary cap relief. That's not a lot at all. And that really shows how much he's valued around the league. And unfortunately, the Hawks may be stuck with him.
The flip side of that, though, is if they are stuck with him, And Coach Bud isn't interested in him being a vital part of the rotation. What is a Dwight Howard coming off the bench doing to a culture that may need a little bit of help, as you talked about? Like, how is that beneficial to a locker room that and a culture inside that building and organization that needs a little bit of life support based on what's happened over the last couple of years? There isn't a whole lot that he's shown us that would make me say, yeah, he'll be really great in a leadership role coming off the bench.
Well, and I don't know, once again, since his Orlando days, would you consider Dwight to be a leader?
No.
Because the leader of this past Hawks team probably was Paul Millsap, and it took a lot for him to assume that role because people had to kind of force that upon him the second half of the season in their various questions of him because Dennis Schroeder's not a leader.
Not yet.
Kent Bazemore's not a leader.
Nope.
And so the only two veterans who have been all-stars on this team are Paul Millsap and Dwight Howard. And if Paul Millsap leaves, then Dwight kind of assumes that that mantle, but I don't know if that's the right course.
That's a problem.
And you can't bring somebody in and expect them to lead this team when he may not know anybody to that degree. And I don't know how much that person may want that role because a lot of guys, they want to make their money. They want to play the games. They don't want all the headaches that come with being the so-called captain or the leader of the team because now you've got to solve all the problems of the locker room, be able to be the guy who's the bad guy sometimes. And some guys can handle that role. Some guys can't.
It's a problematic situation. It's a difficult spot.
Stay tuned.
That this general manager walks into. And like we said last week, and we'll continue to say, a lot of questions. We'll try to provide as many answers as we can as the summer goes on. That was a long first quarter, but a necessary first quarter.
Most definitely.
As there's a lot to talk about. Let's get to the second quarter here and the rest of the NBA playoffs. And unfortunately, or maybe it's not unfortunate. We can ask Mark Spears what he thinks about this as well. The rest of the NBA playoffs seem to be simply us waiting for the Cavs and the Warriors to meet in the finals. I, for one, don't think that that's problematic. I don't think that that's bad. I think they're the two best and most entertaining teams that we have right now and that we've had in a while. But it does water down the competitiveness of the rest of the playoffs, and that's a little bit of a bummer.
Well, it harkens back to the days of the NBA's greatest era when the Lakers and the Celtics would face each other pretty much every year or every other year. And you may have had a Philadelphia team to get into the mix here and there, but I don't mind it either. I have no problem with the two best teams in the league facing on the court that draws the most eyeballs and gets the most non-basketball fan interested in watching. It's all about trying to broaden the product. And what better scene would it be to have these two teams go for the rubber match? And you've got a multi-time, four-time, I believe it's four-time MVP in LeBron James going against the two-time MVP in Steph Curry, and now an additional MVP in Kevin Durant. It would be must-see TV, and ABC, ESPN will certainly love the ratings that they will garner from that kind of series. And yeah, it is disappointing, however, that it's while that's what I'd like to see, that it looks like it's anticlimactic in watching these other playoff series, because you look at some of these games and it's like the speaking of Cleveland, the Cleveland-Toronto series, if I watched more than 20 minutes of that entire four-game set, that would be it.
Because that's a great point.
That's what I expected. And based on the fact that Toronto has never been able to seemingly get over the hump against the Cavs, they didn't disappoint – I should say they disappointed their fans, but they didn't disappoint me in the terms of that's what I thought I'd see and that's what we got. And so they ended up getting – I thought they would win at least one game, however, but they ended up getting swept. And we saw the same with Golden State taking care of Utah, although Utah certainly played very well and much better than Toronto did. And they gave Golden State a nice test, but they just didn't have enough firepower to be able to get over that hump. But then the other two series, the two that are still going on, the Boston-Washington series is has been a real wacky series. When we had our previous podcast, we were talking about a potential Boston sweep because
right.
they were up 2-0. We didn't know if Markieff Morris was going to be coming back to play, and he has, but he still hasn't played the way he's capable of playing. But that backcourt of Beal and Wall, they've turned it up a notch. And that last game this past Sunday, it was a 48-48 halftime score. And I get on my phone for about a good 25 minutes and walk away from the TV set and come back. They're up 22-24 points. And I was like, what the heck happened?
Yeah.
And you later found out it was a 26-0 run that they went on. That's unheard of in any kind of NBA game, because everybody at some point makes a run. But now it's come down to a best-of-three series, and the pivotal Game 5 will certainly determine who may win the series, because we've seen Washington close out in 6, and we saw the Celtics do the same. So I when they took on Chicago in the first round. So it'll be interesting to see how that series develops over the next day or two as we get closer. And then you have Houston and San Antonio. Right now, it's a toss-up there as well.
Very odd series.
Yeah.
San Antonio loses game one big time. Could have been by, I mean, they lost by 30. Could have been by 40 easily. They come back and win a couple and look fairly convincing in doing so. And then Houston wins another game. So we're tied up in that series as well. It's been a competitive series in that the series is tied. But the individual games themselves, and we've seen this a lot in the playoffs the last 5 years or so, where there'll be blowouts one game after another, but the series will go 6 or 7 games. It's very strange. I guess I can't explain it myself, but I would love to see a good game.
Well, and most definitely. And the two variables in this series that I think will determine a lot with Houston, they're without the services of Nene Hilario for the rest of the playoffs, because he tore his adductor muscle in his, I believe it was his left leg. And if they can't replace what he brought to the table, that could hurt them. In addition to the fact, if Houston is not hitting on its threes, we've seen them go into a tailspin, and that's when you can get them. So San Antonio still has a chance because Houston has home court advantage. San Antonio has home court advantage. It's incumbent upon them to win game 5 because they don't want to go back to the Toyota Center down 3-2 with the chances of Houston being able to eliminate them, because they will do that. James Harden does not want to go back to San Antonio to try to win a game 7, because I don't think it'll happen.
The frustrating part about it, though, is it just sort of seems like whoever wins is sort of just a lamb to the slaughter, though, right? Like the Rockets and the Spurs are playing for the right to lose to the Warriors, just like the Celtics and the Wizards are playing for the right to lose to the Cavs.
Right.
And maybe that's not true. Maybe the series will be entertaining and we'll get some good basketball. It just seems to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because obviously your frame of reference is much better than mine. We've had eras where two teams have dominated and they've met in finals repeatedly. Obviously the Celtics and the Lakers in the 80s, and the Bulls were the team that were there over and over and over again in the 90s, and the Spurs and the Lakers again with Shaq and Kobe. Like we've seen dominant teams before. It just seems to me that this incarnation of the Cavs and the Warriors is more dominant. That there's less intrigue. Because even when it was, you know, Jordan going to the finals every year, it was still good series against the Knicks in the Eastern Conference Finals, or the Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Shaq and Kobe Lakers, they had to come back from down 20 to the Blazers in Game 7 of the Western. Like, that was incredible theater.
Yeah.
And the great team ultimately won and won the championship that year. it's possible that the Cavs and the Warriors could both sweep their way into the NBA Finals.
Very unusual.
And that is, it's just weird.
Yeah, it's, we haven't had the type of drama we thought we would have yet in these NBA playoffs. We've had a lot of skirmishes, but that's not drama. That goes on for maybe 30 seconds, maybe a minute, and then it's broken up.
Yeah, press conference whining and guys talking trash to each other.
Yeah,
but
and
it's not enough.
And not a lot of consistent play in all of that either. You've seen it from those teams that have either swept series or up in series. But it's been, Charles Barkley clowned it last night on Inside the NBA. He called it the worst playoff series ever, and collectively. And to some degree, he's right. I can't think of a playoff run where we've seen so many lopsided games or so many conclusions being a done deal before they kind of get started, so to speak. And it's a little bit of a shame because these guys, they certainly have a lot of pride, and you know they don't want to just be viewed as a stepping stone or a floor mat, doormat to the eventual champions, but that's how it's shaping up. But I don't, in that same vein, I don't mind seeing these two teams for the third year in a row. A, it's never been done.
Right.
And so the opportunity for us to see who rises above it and can finally stake claim as the best of the best, I know we've got to hang in there for maybe a couple more weeks, but I'm certain the NBA final is going to be hell on wheels, and it could be, it should be at least a 6-game series between those two, if not 7.
I agree. I mean, it might. It's crazy because, and I agree with Barkley, the lead up thus far has been as boring and predictable as you could possibly get. The final, we might have the best finals, one of the best finals that we've had, maybe, I don't know if ever, but in a really, really long time. I mean, the matchup is there. Everything that you could possibly want is there in terms of intrigue. I just wish that there was a little bit more in the foreplay.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like something a little bit more interesting along the way. Because it's not that long ago that even the 8-versus-1 series would be interesting. The Hawks and Celtics was a great series a number of years ago. The Warriors.
The We Believe Warriors years ago.
As much as I hate to bring this up ever, but the Nuggets and Sonics back in 93, that Sonics team won like 65 games that year.
Yeah.
They were supposed to win the finals.
That image of Dikembe Mutombo is further ingrained in NBA lore of him holding that basketball
and my nightmares.
The Seattle Coliseum.
And my nightmares.
That was a hell of a Saturday afternoon, and I never will forget it. And we have not had
We just don't have that anymore.
Yeah, we haven't had that electric moment that you look back on and you say, wow, that was something. And individual performances, but not collectively. And so hopefully it looks like if we don't get it in the conference final, I'm sure we will see it in the NBA final.
Do you have a theory as to why? Like, is there any sort of thought as to, because just looking, thinking back about, I don't know, that Warriors team that beat the Mavericks team. They had really great players on that team. Now, Baron Davis, of course, led that team.
Steven Jackson.
Yeah, they had like a really interesting core of players. The 8-seed teams now, they have fine players. The Blazers with CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard and stuff like that. But it seems like there was a better depth of talent in the past.
Not just a better depth of talent. What has disappointed me, at least in hearing some of the comments from some of these guys, most notably DeMar DeRozan, it was like they had already given up and they didn't have the fight to try to win. And when he makes comments like, well, we need to shut down LeBron shut down these other guys because we know LeBron is going to get his. Well, no, you don't just say that because it's you're giving Cleveland every ammunition in the world to believe that these guys are just going to roll over if we hit them in the mouth quickly. And we can take their heart and their spirit. And that's exactly what happened in that series. Those guys didn't play like they were ready to seize any particular moment in that game until game four, the last 5 minutes of that series, and it's already over. And so LeBron and Kyrie made a few plays down the stretch, and they were done.
Dunzo.
And so it's
over.
I like to think the talent is better across the league. The East certainly isn't, from top to bottom, as good as the West. But we certainly expected a little bit more competition out of some of these West teams as well.
Yeah.
And we didn't get it this year. And I don't know if that means we could be one of the scenarios a lot of people have been inching towards is just throwing everybody in the playoffs and reseeding them, doing away with the conference labels once it's playoff time and seed the top 16 teams based on their one-loss record. I don't know if that's the wave of the future. But if we keep it up like this and it becomes as non-exciting as it's been the first two rounds, they may go to something.
Got
to
do
that.
Something.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Shake it up.
Got to do something. That's a good conversation for probably a whole podcast
right. As
we get on into the summer. And contraction? I know I'm advocating for expansion as Seattle is still teamless. But, man, it's hard when we're watching these playoff series that it's so lopsided.
Yeah.
And again, ideally leading towards a very exciting NBA Finals. Looking forward to talking about that as the summer goes on. Let's get to our guest. Let's spend the third quarter with among the most knowledgeable NBA minds that we have in the media.
Joining us on the basketball show, you know we try to bring a guest to you, the listeners, each and every week. And this guy who's coming to us tonight is a longtime friend of mine. He's been an NBA writer, I should say, since 1999. Covered the Nuggets, the Celtics. The Celtics, ironically enough, during their NBA championship years. And we'll get into some of that discussion based on Monday night's Inside the NBA show and the collection of Celtic greats who were on the show for that particular night. And in addition to serving as a reporter with Yahoo Sports, and he's currently the senior writer for ESPN The Undefeated, his name is Mark Spears. How you doing, Mark?
Man, where did you get all this proper English from, bruh?
Man, if you don't start with me tonight. To our listeners, Mark and I have known each other for a long time, and we clown on each other incessantly. This dude asked me tonight, "You're on the show?" I said, "Are you serious right now?" Now he's acting like
you got your hand in so many different places, man. I don't know what you decide to do today. You might have a solo R&B album coming out tomorrow. So.
Well, I am not Jamaican. I don't have many jobs.
Yeah.
And let's get this out of the way right now. One before you say it, I'm going to say it. This dude has called me for years Lou Rawls because he says I sound like Lou every time. And when he first heard the song, once we got to know each other, "You'll Never Find," He swore that was me.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I'm sure he'll.
That's a compliment, man.
Yeah, well,
I get it. But I wanted to stunt your joke telling before the night got long.
We're going to have to incorporate that song in the podcast somehow today. Maybe that'll be today's intro song.
Oh, never. Blum, 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 blum.
Well, let's get serious here a little bit.
What's going on, y'all?
We're good on this end. Unfortunately, our basketball team is silent for the year.
Y'all didn't want to believe it, brother.
Well, at least on the court they are. Off the court, it's going to get busy around Atlanta. And you were one of the individuals who broke some of the news regarding the Hawks' future and how things would pan out.
You got to tell your local paper and some of your dignitaries to stop doubting.
Well, there are certain things that we will get into on this show. I'm not going to get into criticizing everybody in Atlanta. You were right. You were right with some of the information you had. I will say that. And you've been around the league long enough.
And I'm not touchdown dancing. It ain't that serious, but
no, because
you shouldn't
do that right now because I'm sure some of your predictions are still on tap as the NBA playoffs pan out. But that being said. You did indicate that a change was forthcoming with the Hawks, and why did you feel that way, and what do you think the Hawks should do moving forward now that they have that open vacancy?
Well, I mean, I was kind of surprised at the timing of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the draft's not too far away, and that's a major change to make at this time. That's typically a change you make right after the season, but – you know, obviously ownership had to mull it over for a while, and I don't know if it's like the previous Hawks ownership where you had to get, you know, a lot of stamps on to approve it. I wouldn't be surprised if more changes to come. It'll be interesting to see who they get to lead this show. I'm sure Grant Hill's going to be heavily involved in who's up next. And you know, when I hear the name Joe Dumars, I get excited about it. For the franchise, I think it's long overdue that somebody hire one of the greatest general managers in the history of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And with everything that's happened through the Hawks recently, a stable guy like him, and, you know, regardless to what race he is, you know, which might play a role of interest as well, but Regardless of that, I mean, I don't know that you could find anybody more qualified than the rumored candidate, Joe Dumars.
Based on the time we have to work with, how important, and based on your experience of covering coaching changes, GM changes around the league, how important is it or is it that the Hawks find somebody before the draft?
Oh, it's crucial. I mean, what pick do they have?
17?
Yeah, see, this is a draft, too, where I think at this point you're just really going to have to trust your scout. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? When you're a GM coming in, you're coming in late, especially if you're a Joe and you weren't around all that season looking at talent. You're really going to have to trust your scouts because you could get a really good player at 12 or you could mess up and somebody could get that player at 18. This is going to be a special draft where I think it's through lottery. It's really, really great.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, I keep hearing that it could drop dramatically. So after that, to me, that's when the real drafting takes part. It's easy to draft. Not that it's easy, but, I mean, oh, my goodness, I got to pick between Ball and Folks and Fox and you know, Josh Jackson.
Right.
That's a great problem to have. When you get to where the Hawks pick, that's where the real talent of a scout comes in. And, you know, whoever comes in to run the franchise, I mean, that's going to be the first, assuming it's done before the draft, that's going to be the first major decision because ultimately it comes on them, not the scout. It probably behooves the franchise to do it sooner rather than later.
That's the first decision, right? The draft. The second thing will be what they do in free agency. So from your perspective, what do you think the biggest question that the new general manager is going to have to answer will be?
Well, I guess you need shooting, but you had one. You traded him. So
yeah.
I think shooting's obviously important. I think that a small forward is important. Are you happy with the point guard position? There's a lot of things that you could get better there at. I'm sure for Hawks fans it has to be kind of disappointing because there has been some success there lately to be knocked out of the playoffs so fast. But I'm curious to see, you know, how some of the young guys are exciting to me. I like what Hardaway did. He showed some promise. I'm curious to see what Bembry does when given more of an opportunity. But it ain't a bare bones thing. You got stuff to work with there. There is some clay. It's not clay from Rome, but it's clay.
And
I think you just got to figure out. And I don't think this is an amazing draft class, but there might be a better opportunity to draft the person. I mean, to trade for the person you want rather than to draft them or get them in free agency.
Mark, as we shift to, and we're here with Mark Spears from The Undefeated, ESPN's The Undefeated, senior NBA writer. As we shift towards the playoffs, we're getting to the conference final rounds, and Cleveland and Golden State are two of the four teams that will make it with a couple of series left to be played by the time we do this taping. Who's your pick to reach the conference finals to oppose them, and then ultimately, who do you see facing off in the NBA Finals? Is it as cut and dry as we think it is?
You know what? In the West, it's funny. Mike Monroe, longtime NBA scribe.
Mm-hmm.
I've known him for a long time, and you know, I've been getting a lot of questions. Like people that are covering the series are confused as to who's going to win it. You know, win the Spurs and Houston series. Mike though made a good point. Mike said, you know what, if Houston makes threes, they'll win. If they don't, they'll lose. And
yeah.
I think it can be that simple. Another thing that comes to mind is, you know, it's how are their stars going to pick up? Is James Harden ready to show us something really, really special, you know, to show us that, like, this is where, I mean, the votes are in, but show us why you should be MVP. Same with Kawhi Leonard. Like, to me, they got to bring their guys there. It's the best of three series now. It could go to a game seven. I'm excited about this series and watching this. But I think it becomes between those two guys and the shooting in Houston. Injuries are obviously a big part of struggles for that can come rebounding-wise and defensively from Houston, and also Tony Parker is huge for them. As far as the Washington series is going, I really want to believe that Washington is the better team.
Mm-hmm.
I want to believe that John Wall is the best player in the series. I think Washington can do it. But they're kind of like every time I want to believe in Washington, man, they do the Lucy from Peanuts and move the football on me. You know what I mean? So I'm going to buy Washington, but I'm waiting for them to move the football on me too.
And ultimately, when we get to the finals, who's your two picks and who do you expect to win it?
Oh, man. It's kind of early, ain't it, Art? You can't bring me back?
Well, everyone seems to claim it's going to be Golden State and Cleveland for the third time.
No, I mean, I'd be shocked if it wasn't.
Yeah.
Stunned if it wasn't. But to be honest, I just think Golden State's the better team for several reasons. I watched them play them twice. Golden State blew a game in Cleveland that they should have won due to lack of focus. After that game, they basically had a bunch of come-to-Jesus meetings, and they've been better ever since. And they beat up on Cleveland and Golden State. I just think their defense is just outstanding. Kevin Durant is a huge addition that makes LeBron have to guard in the East. I think LeBron has the luxury of coasting a lot. Like, who's made him work defensively so far in these playoffs?
Good point.
Has anyone?
No, you're a very good point.
Not yet.
I mean, he's going to have to work against Kevin Durant. And so I just think the combination of Warriors defense, just their ability to score and run, and the fact that LeBron's going to have to play on both ends is going to be ultimately too much for Cleveland to handle this time.
What do you say to the people that claim that the predictability of these two teams being back in the finals potentially 3 years in a row is a bad thing for the NBA? What do you say to those people?
This is the same people that probably enjoyed Lakers versus Celtics. You know what I mean? I love that.
Oh, yeah, same here.
It was an amazing rivalry that I finally remember as a kid. Watching Larry Bird versus Magic Johnson, L.A. versus Boston, you know, there's kind of the same thing. You got, you know, I live in the Bay Area. You got the cool Bay Area, Silicon Valley, San Francisco, Brooklyn West and Oakland versus, you know, Hard Knock Life Cleveland. That's cold. And it's one of those cities that always gets knocked down, you know,
mm-hmm.
as a place that's like, why do you want to go there? So, I mean, the dynamics are always going to be good between these two. And I think if you had no dog in the race, why would you not want to see Cleveland and Golden State play? I mean, to me, it's obvious that they're the best in both conferences. I hope nobody on any of the teams get hurt. I don't want any of that to affect what's going to happen from here on out. It just really seems like that's what we're heading to, and I wouldn't be surprised if both teams are undefeated heading that way. The one kind of hidden story that is going to get big, and then people aren't really talking about it right now, is the Mike Brown aspect.
Yep.
You know, that Mike Brown is coaching the Warriors, that Mike Brown used to coach the Cleveland and LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
Took Cleveland to their first finals and lost, got pushed out twice. If the Warriors are still coached by Brown in these finals and they end up beating Cleveland, in Cleveland, I think that would be a big story. I think it would be a real big redemption story for him. But if he loses a game, he's going to be the first guy that gets a finger pointed at him as well. So a lot of pressure on Mike Brown, but so far he seems to be handling it very, very well.
Well, given the fact that you're out in the Bay Area, what is your thoughts on Steve Kerr? Do you think there's a chance that he might miss the upcoming finals, if not both the Western Conference finals?
I expect him to.
Wow.
And if he's in so much pain, like, I don't want to see him.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Mm-hmm. I want to see him when he's good. I care. Steve is such a nice guy, such a great guy to be around, such a gracious guy. Where you get to know him a little bit. Like, he's good people, man. Like, I want to see Steve Kerr not in pain
mm-hmm.
and smiling. You know what I mean? I really don't care about the basketball aspect for him right now. I remember being on a plane with him once. He was actually on Southwest going from Oakland to San Diego, and he mentioned to me, like a dumb reporter, I didn't catch it. I was like, oh, man. I'm like, oh, he said he was going to have back surgery. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't think it was a big deal because he didn't play, you know. But obviously it ended up being a huge deal when things went the wrong way. And to just you can't find too many nicer people than him, more caring people than him. So I care more about Steve Kerr, the man, instead of Steve Kerr, the coach. And, you know, I think the Warriors, as great as a coach as he is, I think they'll be fine without him and certainly be playing in his honor.
No, I certainly understand, and I can certainly echo those comments about Steve Kerr. It's a shame that he's having to endure these troubles right now, because you want to see him at his best, because he is one of the, you know, he was the NBA's Coach of the Year a couple of years ago, and he deserves to be with his troops. And as we wrap up this segment,
he's also like the most woke coach.
Yes, very much so.
NBA, him and Popovich and Van Gundy. I mean, I think Steve Kerr said more about, you know, civil issues and issues between blacks and police than any black coach has. So,
well, and
perhaps there's a little affinity from me for him in that as well.
And if fans don't know the backstory with Steve Kerr, do a little research. His father was a professor at American University and was gunned down back in, if I'm not mistaken, when Steve was in
late 80s.
Yeah, in the late 80s, when he was in college. So,
in Lebanon, right?
Yes, in Lebanon. So it's not just today that all of a sudden Steve Kerr decided to be active. Yeah. He's been that way for most of his career.
He didn't get an Afro pick in his head yesterday. He's had one in his back pocket for a long time.
As we wrap up with you, Mark, I'd be remiss. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you to talk a little bit about your time with the Celtics and the championship year and the anything is possible days of Garnett, Allen, Rondo, and Paul Pierce. And on Monday night on Inside the NBA, these guys got a chance to get together for KG's Area 21. And there's been, as we, those of us who follow the NBA closely, we know there's been a lot of back and forth between these guys and their relationship with Ray Allen. And evidently, Rajon Rondo was the impetus behind trying to line up a reunion with these guys for based on their 10-year anniversary. And Ray Allen was left out of that mix. You know each of these guys better than anybody else, having covered them. Are you surprised that these feelings are still this raw between these guys?
No, the funny takeaway that I had about it was, like, Kirk tells a story about that KG and KD, I'm sorry, Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook have, you know, reached an olive branch between each other. And they're like, oh, man, that's great. That's great. That's wonderful. That's great. But Ray Allen, ah! You know, like I said, well, you guys just said that that was cool that they had an olive branch. I just don't like I love all those guys, man. They were great to me. That was an amazing time in my life to cover a champion. They were incredible competitors. Like, when I watch the Warriors right now, I see that Celtics team unity in them. And I don't know that it's completely fair to say, well, we're mad at Ray, so Ray needs to call us and apologize for the way he left.
Right.
Well, you know what?
Go ahead.
I think that Paul or KG, and I don't see KG doing it, but, like, when I talk to Paul about it, you could tell, like, it bothers him. You know what I mean? Like, he's going with the gangrene, like, you know, Ray. Like, when he talks about it, like, man, it really hurt me that he decided to leave, and Paul's told me that, you know, I think Ray's wife and Paul's wife still talk, and he follows Ray on Instagram. Like, man, somebody call somebody.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they had one of the most special championships I ever saw. And I hate for them to go to Boston when they celebrate it and that be the story. You know what I mean? Like, it's not. No one says that y'all got to be best friends and kumbaya and put your arm around each other. But you don't win a championship without Ray Allen.
Oh, no doubt about it.
And Ray's as stubborn as they are. You know, let me not exempt him in it. He could call and be like, yo, let's hash it out.
Yeah.
But he's too stubborn to do it. He's mad. You saw Rondo take the high road, and Rondo's like, yeah, I don't even want to talk about it. which is probably a smart thing. I think I was the last person that he talked to that talked about it, that he talked about it to, and he certainly has some harsh feelings, so, but I'm just really hoping that by the time, like, Danny Ainge and Doc Rivers, to me, they got to be the person to mend this.
Yeah.
You know, they got to get that together. I think Doc's the main guy to get it together. Like, they ain't got to, like, you know, hug like crazy and cry together. You know what I mean? But as they said, they did cry together.
Right.
I mean, I think somebody has to make the call. There was actually – how much time you got, Trish?
Oh, you can keep going.
There was a time when me and James Posey, and this is some real inside basketball thing, me and James Posey had an issue that dated back to my time with the Denver Nuggets. And I don't want to bore anybody on the story.
No, but I remember you telling me about it. We talked about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but, you know, James didn't like me, and I didn't really like James. I respected James, but the way things went down with this story in particular – that was it was in regards to the Nuggets boycotting the practice. You know, we got to be at real bad odds in it. And I had told Doc about it when I took the job in Boston to cover the team. And I didn't – when I say I didn't dislike James, but we were at odds. You know what I mean? And I don't think James disliked me, but we were at odds over the coverage of the story, you know, which I won't bore you with the details. But anyways, make a long story short, I went to dinner with Doc after I got the job – covered the Celtics in 2007, and he said, you know what, man, I'm going to go fix that, and I want you guys to get together, and I'm going to make sure you get together. So I get to Rome after one of the practices. Doc says, James, Mark, come here. Y'all sit down right here and hash it out, figure it out. We talked for about 5 minutes, and it was squash, right? Doc needs to do that. If he could, you know what I'm saying?
Over a couple of mock ties.
A lot more complicated.
Yeah.
But I tell that story to say that Doc is good at fixing problems. You know, so to me, there's nobody better to fix this than Doc Rivers. And I mean, it's – I don't know how he does it. I don't know if he does some kind of trick thing where they have an intervention and all of a sudden everybody's in the same room.
Right.
You know, but – I think Boston and those guys deserve to celebrate their championship all on the same page.
Well, because at least at some point there may be a reunion at Boston Garden, and they're going to
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, they're going to have to face each other.
10-year reunion. I mean, next season is the reunion season.
Right.
And if I'm the Celtics, like, I'm pushing that celebration as late as possible.
Well,
because Doc, I hope those guys will figure it out before then, you know?
Well, Doc was the originator.
Like, whatever the last regular season game is, celebrate it then.
Yeah. Well, it might not be a bad idea. I mean, Doc is definitely, he was the originator of the phrase Mbutu. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, and, exactly.
And
go
so
get the Mbutu guy, the brother.
These guys,
him back.
These guys have a lot of history, and we certainly appreciate your knowledge and what you delivered on that situation, as well as the other information you provided to us and your wealth of NBA knowledge. I certainly want to thank you for joining us today, Andy and myself, on the Basketball Show. He's the senior NBA writer for the Undefeated, my man, Mark Spears.
But senior don't mean I'm old. It just means...
You just had to add one more.
I'm respected. It means I'm respected.
Well, and Andy, I'll tell you one thing, one last thing with Mark. Sekou Smith and I, we are tightest, we're thick as thieves.
Mm-hmm.
And when the movie The Hangover came out, Mark and I went and watched it in L.A. I believe the Hawks were in L.A. at the time. And that line, we're the three best friends that anyone could have.
Best friends anyone.
It is fit to this day. We get sideways, as a group of people might, but we always squash it, and to this day, we're still best of buds. And
ever since that movie came out, Sekou got like a quarter of an inch taller.
You know he's going to hear this, right?
Oh, of course. That's why I said it.
All right. We appreciate it again, Mark.
Because he, like, you know, Sekou loses all this weight. He's like, you know, a model for small clothes now. You know what I'm saying? Looking all handsome and, you know, and like TV star, man. So, you know, I'm a little jealous, man, but, you know.
Well, at least you're taking.
I'm super proud of his success, man.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. Now, the only thing that has to happen, I've got to get back in the league, and so we can all act a fool once again.
Hey,
that's
can
all.
Can I say something too?
Yeah, go right ahead.
I probably shouldn't reveal, but I'm going to reveal it. The National Association of Black Journalists would also like to offer the one and only Arthur Trish a Pioneer Award in New Orleans, Louisiana, on August 11th. And it would be our honor if you could be there and get one of the Pioneer Awards that, is very special to our group. It's named after the Larry Whiteside, one of the early great black sports journalists. And you think you'd want that award? In your hometown?
You really know how to choke up a guy. I appreciate that, my man. And I do accept.
I feel like I'm asking you to marry me or something.
No, not yet.
He said I do.
I appreciate that. And I didn't know we were going to get some jokes as well as an exclusive here on the basketball show. So, Mark.
So is that a yes?
It is definitely a yes. It'll be, as a matter of fact, it'll be. We don't do these jobs to get recognized, and I know you'll say that as well and echo that, but this will be the first award that I will have ever received in 30-plus years of being in pro sports and college sports and now working in radio. And it will definitely mean – and I know Larry Whiteside as well as you do, the former Boston Globe writer, and having spent time with him at the National Sports Festival in Baton Rouge, it's an honor. I really appreciate that, and on behalf of the – rest of the members of the NABJ, I really appreciate that, and I look forward to seeing you guys in August.
Yeah. Only thing is, you got to pay your own way.
I knew there was a catch.
Hey, but for all the listeners now, it's a secret. Don't tell nobody.
You know, yeah, like within 24 hours.
Later, so, you know, this can't be online or nothing like that. It can't be tweeted out. It's just between us as family, but. Now, congrats, Trish, and we look forward to honoring you.
So you're telling me we can't put this on the basketball show then?
You can, but I'm telling everybody listening to not say that.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, it's a done deal. We appreciate that, my man. And how much the Big Easy means to me, and being the first black PR director in NBA history is something I've cherished more probably since being out of the league. And I loved it in this coming August. When I received that award, that hopefully I'm back in the league representing and doing the job I used to do because I enjoyed it very much.
Is he crying?
Close. I am too, though. I'm like, that was very cool.
Nah, man. Congratulations, brother.
Appreciate
it. Don't tweet it out yet, man.
I won't. You know, how much I love Twitter.
Yeah, but I trust everybody on your show. And you got two Twitters, so don't say it yet.
The other one, yeah. I don't use it as much, but you're right.
But I wanted to offer you that on this platform. So congratulations.
Thanks again, my man. Cool. That's Mark Spears.
All right.
Thanks, Mark.
Senior NBA writer for The Undefeated.
All right, on to the fourth quarter here, our old school throwback segment. We're not going to throw it back that far.
Not that far.
This time, but a little ways, about a decade or so.
We got an assist.
We did.
From the Boston Celtics. As we talked about with Mark Spears in the third quarter this week, the Celtics got together for KG's TNT Inside the NBA little segment called Area 21, and they brought together several members of the Celtics 2008 championship team, Rajon Rondo, Kendrick Perkins, Paul Pierce, and Big Baby Davis. And conspicuously absent, and Doc Rivers made a special appearance, but conspicuously absent was the guy who they've been very bitter with for a number of years, and surprisingly they haven't let it go, is Ray Allen. And during that program, you could tell the feelings were still raw with these guys, and they're planning on having a reunion because their 10th year anniversary of their championship is next season, and they're planning on going to the islands or someplace in Europe this summer. And Ray wasn't invited. And it's stunning that grown men who have made a boatload of money over the years can get over their feelings. And unfortunately, it came to fruition even more on the program last night, and it doesn't look like the division is going to end anytime soon.
Yeah, and I think grown men is the best and most important phrase here, or supposed grown men, right?
Correct.
These guys aren't rookies in the NBA anymore.
No.
They're all in their late 30s, some of them in their early 40s.
Rondo's the only current active player.
Right, yeah. And Doc Rivers is involved in this in a way, and he's obviously even older than that. And seemingly one of the most mature people that you can ever meet. Obviously, Mark Spears just told us he's mm-hmm. great at solving conflicts, solved a conflict that Mark had with a player. And just to me, it just seems like somebody, hopefully it's Ray, because it seems like it's going to have to be Ray. Somebody, all it's going to take is someone picking up the phone and saying, hey, you know, let's get together for dinner. Let's do whatever needs to happen. It does need to happen, because it's not just for Celtics fans, but for basketball fans in general. Like, that was a really important team. That was a really important moment in mm-hmm. NBA history when mm-hmm. those guys came together, for better or for worse. And mm-hmm. I know some people might argue for worse. Now we've sort of seen the super team era, and they kind of started it. But it was an important moment in basketball history. Not only that, all three of these guys are going to the Hall of Fame. Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, and Paul Pierce are going to the Hall of Fame, and they're going to be remembered for that team. Mm-hmm. I really hope they can handle it quickly, because I like all three of those guys individually. I especially like Ray Allen because of his time in Seattle and what a great guy he was off the court and in that community. I hope they can figure it out soon, because it is very, very petty.
Yeah, Ray is the only one of those guys that I really know well, and it's from his days in both Seattle and Milwaukee that I got to know him and a lot of his handlers. But he was always at the gym 2 or 3 hours before, and sometimes 3 or 4 hours before. And we would have a conversation, catching up on things, seeing how each was doing, and hoping he wouldn't knock down his long-range jumpers on us on a given night. But the dedication he put into his craft, Ray is certainly a future Hall of Famer. But I think with all of these guys, there's a lot of pride going on right now that someone is going to have to be the king of the bunch to kind of get them all together. And I think that is going to be Doc Rivers, because Doc can handle that situation. He, having been a coach for so many years, he's dealt with the brickbats before and all of the back and forth yelling in locker rooms and this guy liking me today and this guy not liking me tomorrow. And so he can handle it. First of all, get them all drunk. I assume they all drink. Get them all drunk and they let them have... If it gets to where they have to go into the room and yell and scream at each other, and if there's some fisticuffs thrown, then so be it.
That's the best solution to basically any problem.
It's another chapter of the book that they will eventually write. But one thing, there was one takeaway, however, if you didn't get a chance to see the video in its entirety. Glenn Davis is still a little in his feelings bag with Doc Rivers.
He is.
And he had some shots that he was throwing out there while other people were talking that I picked up on that... Doc could be on the hot seat in L.A. with the Clippers, to where he says, hot seat my ass. And I forget what the other thing he said later in the program, but I was like, okay, Glenn seems like he's not feeling the other Glenn. So
he's a little salty. Yeah, a little Glenn on Glenn violence
there. Yeah, yeah.
And that's, you know, that's fine. I'm not as worried about Glenn Davis
as I am about
Ray Allen and the big three. But you're right. There was still a little bit of shade there. But I think there comes a point where you realize that all that stuff was business.
Mm-hmm.
It was all business.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're all out of it. You've all made incredible amounts of money. You're good forever.
Yeah.
You're going to be revered forever. You're loved in
Boston.
And other, KG will always be loved in Minnesota, mm-hmm. and Pierce will always be loved in LA, and Ray will always be loved in Seattle, as far as I'm concerned. These guys are heroes and their careers are over. It's just, it's unfortunate. Now I get it though. I don't want to sit here and act like I'm not a guy who's never been like
sideways with someone.
Exactly. Yeah. Macho and unapologetic about something. Of course I have. But after a while that fades and then you realize how ridiculous you're being. That's actually the worst.
Well, I think a couple of guys who can also play a large role in this, Sam Cassell and Tyronn Lue, because both were assistant coaches with Doc on that team. T. Lue is a real good friends with Kevin Garnett, and Sam Cassell is friends with everybody. I mean, Sam's a great guy. He should be a head coach one day himself. And he was in the studio last night. They didn't have him on air. They showed him, but he wasn't really having a speaking role. But this came to me a few minutes ago, knowing how coaches love to play mind games. And what I mean by that is to get their players ready to play against an opponent and show how things came together with either the franchise's makeup and how the pieces came together and creating it with some great music and imagery. That's probably what they need to do. They need to be reminded what it took to win that championship together and show the legacy of each and every player and how they came to Boston and how much of a family they were. And I'm sure they had some ups and downs through the year. They did win the title. Hell, the Hawks, we pushed them to 7 games.
That's right.
And while I don't know if they ever thought they had a chance of losing that series, we certainly thought we could beat them. We thought we should have played. We certainly should have played better in Game 7.
I could be crazy, but I think they went to 7 in every series
every
that year.
Every series
so
that year.
That's about as...
So you have tons of highlights, tons of instances of teamwork that went on in each of those games and series that you would like to think that it would tug at the heartstrings and remind them what it took to comprise that team. And the saying that Doc and the guys had from that year, not anything is possible, but Ubuntu. And it was an old African saying, and I don't recall off the top of my head what it actually meant, but it meant something to each of those guys. And that's what they have to think about when they go through the process of getting back together again. And somebody's going to have to be man enough to make that call, whether it's Doc, whether it's Ray, whether it's KG, whether it's Rondo, because it seemed like those are the four, or whether it's Paul. I mean, Paul is friends with, seeming like he's still, according to what Mark Spears told us, he's been in more in contact, whether it's through wives or whatever, with Ray Allen than anybody else amongst that group. And Kendrick is still feeling some kind of way as well, because they feel Ray was the one who left and he was the one who caused it all. But somebody's got to be the bigger man here, and it's time for them to – it's been 10 years. It's time to put it aside.
Isn't it the worst when you've been hard-headed about something for a long time, and then you realize that you have, and then you deal with it, but then you think back about how hard-headed – like, it's so embarrassing sometimes what we'll do.
As we've talked before, as it relates to the NBA, it was the breakup of Shaq and Kobe.
Right.
Those guys should have remained together themselves.
They should have.
And they had won 3 straight championships, and then they became history. And now Kobe went on to win another with Pau Gasol, and that's all great and dandy. But they could have rolled into Staples Center with several more championships and a lot of memories to last a lifetime. And those guys got sideways, but yet they rose above it. And they now speak, and they, at least on appearances, give the impression that that's water under the bridge. And so it's time for the Celtics to do the same thing.
Youth is wasted on the young, isn't it? We get older and realize how dumb we were when we were 26. Like, if only you had known what you know now, they could have won more championships, and these guys would not be on TV being petty towards one another. I think that's about wraps it up for us on this edition.
For week 5 of the basketball show, yes.
Before we go, again, big congratulations
to you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
It's an honor that's well-deserved, and really cool to be here and hear Mark Spears tell you about it. Yeah, I know you and I both, you know, I saw you get choked up. I did too. I was sitting over here like, oh, that is just the best. So congratulations to you. And
looking forward to it in
something
August.
That you absolutely deserve.
Thanks again, Andy. I appreciate it. And we look to deal with you listeners again next week as we hopefully bring even more content and great news from the NBA.
Don't tweet about that, though. Like
yeah,
Mark
that's
said,
right.
Don't tweet about it.
That's right. That's supposed to be so-called secret, so he let the cat out of the bag, so we'll try not to do the same. But you can follow us both on Twitter. I'm at @XHoopsPRGuy.
And I'm at Mr. Andy Bunker.
And until next time, from way downtown, bang!
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.